Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Sutta Vacha. Tayetam kalapadai Parinuta kilodaya Mandam jahasa vaikunto Moyan nivamaya Sutta vacha Pritayetam kalapadai
Vitaya Vaiprita Kunti Itam this Kalapadai by chosen words Arinuta being worshipped Akila universal Udaya glorious Mandam, mildly. Jahasa, smiled. Vaikunta, the Lord. Mohayan, captivating. Eva, like. Maya, this mystic power. Translation. Sudha Goswami said, the Lord, thus hearing the prayers of Kunti Devi, composed in choice words for his glorification, mildly smiled. That smile was as enchanting as his mystic power. Purport. Anything that is enchanting in the world is said to be a representation of the Lord. The conditioned souls who are engaged in trying to lord it over the material world are also enchanted by his mystic powers. But his devotees are enchanted in a different way by the glories of the Lord. And his merciful blessings are upon them. His energy is displayed in different ways, as electrical energy works in manifold capacities. Srimati Kunti Devi has prayed to the Lord just to enunciate a fragment of his glories. All his devotees worship him in that way by chosen words, and therefore the Lord is known as Uttama Sloka. No amount of chosen words is sufficient to enumerate the Lord's glory, and yet he is satisfied by such prayers as the father is satisfied even by the broken linguistic attempts of the growing child. The word Maya is used both in the sense of delusion and mercy. Even the word Maya is used in the sense of the Lord's mercy upon Kunti Devi. Om Jnanati Manandasya Jnanandana Salakaya Shakshur Nishanya Tasmai Sikurve Namah Mukham Kurdi Vachalam Pangam Namkayate Girin Yad Kripa Tamam Vande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam Shri Chaitanya Swaram Paramanamanamam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinoda,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
The 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is known as the is known as Vibhuti Yoga, or that which describes the vibhutis of Krishna, the opulences of Krishna. And it is said that whenever there is great opulence found in the material world, we see Krishna within that. For example, the Himalayas are mentioned as representing Krishna because they are the greatest amongst mountains. The shark is represented as representing Krishna because of its extraordinary power. So in this way, whenever we see great power in this world, we take it that it is representing Krishna. Or here, it is said anything that's enchanting in the world is said to be a representation of the Lord. In the second canto, there is a reference which explained that beauty in this world is the smile of Krishna. So that is also interesting. Let me see that there is a correspondence between the spiritual world and the material world. Yata Bharka Pratibimba, it says in the 10th canto, or as a boy is looking in a pond at his own reflection. In that way, Krishna is looking at all his energies, and the material world is the reflection of the spiritual world. Just as a tree or bank of a body of water is reflected in the water. And depending on whether there is wind or not, when there is no wind, we see a completely clear reflection. When there is wind, the reflection becomes distorted. So, in that way, in the mode of goodness, we get a clear representation, a clear reflection of the spiritual world. In the mode of passion, that reflection of the spiritual energy becomes more distorted. And in the mode of ignorance, it is unrecognizable. And it's just maybe a color still. Something corresponds, but very difficult. So in that way, the material energy is a reflection of the spiritual world, but according to the three modes of material nature, the distortion is great, is lesser or greater. And of course, in the reflection, there may be certain elements of the original, but there's also something missing. A tree with mangoes looks very beautiful in the reflection, but you can't taste the mangoes. So in this way, the material energy may look very beautiful, and we may see that Krishna is reflected in that beauty of the material world, but yet we cannot taste the happiness of the spiritual world. And in that way, the material energy is at the same time absolutely amazing. It is amazing. If you look at nature and you see how the light, if the sunlight is playing on the leaves that are moving in the wind, such a variety of colors and shades, actually, if you really look at it, some painters have this vision, you know. An ordinary person with dull intelligence just sees green, or trees, green. But a painter, he sees like all the shades at a glance, and some painters bring that out. You know, the material energy is manifesting itself in endless varieties and very beautiful. And in that way, it's just amazing, amazing how beautiful it is. Sometimes we see a lady, and she is so beautiful. And even on a journey, she stays beautiful. Right? Everyone else begins to look like worn out, you know, from the trip. And nothing seems to touch her. She's just beautiful. So in this way, we become bewildered by the beauty of the material energy. She is so beautiful. And we think, yes, beauty. There are many stories in the history of the world where the beauty of a woman has been equated with noble character. Because in the spiritual world it is like that. That the beauty in the spiritual world is a further manifestation of the beautiful interior qualities in the person. Just like Srimati Radharani is described as the most beautiful. No one can compare. And that is a further expression of her pure and unalloyed devotional qualities. But in the material world, the beauty may well be the beauty of Putana. When Putana arrived in Vrindavan, she took that form of this incredibly beautiful woman. And that woman, and that very day, all the men, Nanda Maharaj and his cowherd men associates, had gone to Mathura to pay tax. So only ladies and old men were present there. And when this very beautiful, beautiful female appeared and wanted to see Krishna, as the old men, they were just stunned. There it is, looking like they couldn't say anything anymore. They were just staring. And the ladies, they thought, oh, she must be a goddess. Because no one can be as beautiful as that. She cannot be of this earth. She must be a goddess. Maybe she is the goddess of fortune who has come to see Krishna. Because after all, Krishna is so attractive. Even the goddess of fortune is attracted to him. Maybe she's the goddess of fortune. And in that way, Putana could freely enter the house and pick up the child, put it at the breast. The rest of the story is history. Putana felt that the child was indeed sucking the poison, and he was also sucking the milk from her breast. And then he also was sucking the life air. That she had not counted on. And she tried to pull the child off her breast, but it was difficult because with his two little hands, he was holding on very tight and he was squeezing very hard. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said that she tried to pull the child off her breast, was not possible. And due to the pain, she couldn't maintain that false form any longer. And she started to take her original form. Now, mind you, that form is rather on the large side. It is described as 20 kilometers. So, you know, what would happen if in the middle of the house suddenly someone takes a form of 20 kilometers? Wouldn't be much left of the house. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that due to the pain, and she couldn't pull off the child, and she tried to run away. So she ran away, and Krishna was dangling on her enormous body. And then she took her full form, just as she came on the edge of Vrindavan, and then left her body, crashed to the ground in the favorite fruit orchard of Kamsa. Krishna's in control. Any time and arranged it all. So, like that, we see the descriptions of Krishna's pastimes. And we see various varieties in his glorification. We see more detail appearing in different descriptions, and there is no limit actually to the depth of Krishna's pastimes. Somehow or other, when I was still quite new in Krishna consciousness, I had joined in Vrindavan, and then I had to leave Vrindavan because my visa was finished. I had to go back to Europe. And I got, somehow or other, I got jaundice and I was ill. So I stayed outside the temple for a while because I was very ill. And then when I came back to the temple, I came and wanted to move in the temple in Amsterdam. And they told me, when I came in, they told me to wait. And I was sitting next to the door on a chair. And they said, read this magazine. It was a Back to Godhead magazine. And I said, oh, I already read that. And then he said, it doesn't matter. A devotee can read it again and again. So, all right, you know. It was the instruction I got, and I was reading. And then after, and I read it again and again, after about half an hour, the person came back, and I said, I'm here, just wait. And so I kept on reading, and in fact I was sitting there most of the day, reading the same magazine, the same stories over and over. And that was very interesting. I discovered many, many interesting things. Actually, prior to that, before I got involved with Krishna consciousness, I got two books somehow or other. One was the Bhagavad Gita, which I liked very much, and the other one was the Krishna book, which I didn't like at all. I thought, this book, you know, there is no plot, you know. Every time there is some demon, Krishna comes, 1, 2, 3, boom, demon dead, you know. I thought, it's not one of those books where you want to look on the last page, who won, you know, Krishna or the demon. So I thought, I don't know about this book, you know, there's no plot. Not exciting. Krishna always wins. But then when I was reading the magazine, I was reading stories about Krishna. And as I was reading the same story of Krishna over and over, I found newer and newer details in the story of Krishna that I hadn't noticed before. And I suddenly realized it's not about that it's always a completely new story. It's actually about going deeper and deeper into these pastimes. And in that way, discovering little by little the unlimited qualities of Krishna. And rather than always something new. Like some years ago in Vrindavan, there was a bit of an uproar in the town when some wealthy man from Delhi had given a lot of money to some panda to dress the deities in blue jeans, t-shirt, and police sunglasses. And they did it because it was a big donation. So, of course, you know, for many that was outrageous. And it was outrageous, undoubtedly. But this is the mind of Kali Yuga, always wanting something new. I mean, can we have something else? You know, Krishna always a cowherd boy. Can't he do something else for a change? Why does he always have to do the same pastimes anyway? I'm kidding. The cows, you know, that's why. Can't Krishna ride on a motorbike or something? A little bit of variety. No, the variety is not in that same gross way. It is because in the material world, the spiritual energy is reflected in a perverted way. It is said the material energy is a perverted reflection of the material energy. And therefore, although it is full of beauty and variety, the enjoyment is very shallow. And therefore, one day we can enjoy the cows, the next day we enjoy the motorbikes, then maybe flying kites, and what's next? You know, what's next? What are we going to do next? Well, maybe, some theme park in Singapore where you can, you know, see real sharks from underwater behind the window. Wow, let's go there. Always looking for new excitement. Vyasyatmika Murika Kurunana Bhavasakyantascha. The conditioned soul becomes Bhavasakya. many branch in searching for enjoyment, looking here, looking there, nothing satisfied. Oh, Melbourne, oh, Melbourne, oh, Melbourne. Am I sick of Melbourne? Yeah, it's always the same Melbourne. Can't we go to Bali? And then Bali, no, we've been to Bali so many times. Let's go to Fiji. No, we were there also 2 years ago. Where to go then? I don't know. That's the material world. Never satisfied, always looking for more and more and more and more. But still, we get some enjoyments from this material energy, so you won't give it up either. You hold on to it, and then you see a boy walking with his girlfriend on his hand. He holds her tight, and meanwhile smiling at other girls. So he's not satisfied with what he has, but he will not let go also. No. He will fight, but at the same time smiling at other ones. So this is the nature of material enjoyment, because it's shallow, not satisfying. And that is the issue. We can argue, is there enjoyment in the material world? And if you say, there is, if we get very rigid and say, there is no enjoyment in the material world, and then we go like, but, you know, there is, you know, there is chapati and there is pizza. You know what I mean? I know the art called the pizza wants a self-realized chapati. That's interesting that there is a distinction. We can make a distinction. You know, chapati is okay, but a little dry. Pizza, you know, pizza is much better. In that way, we can see what is good and what is bad in the material world. It's like that. What you say, we can see who's beautiful, who's ugly, who's old, who's young, and so on. These things are all very noticeable. I just a few days ago somewhere read that Lisa Minnelli at 66 years of age wanted a 90-year-old boy. You know, of course, she has lots of facelifts and everything lifts, so I guess it still looks like something. But will it ever end? Ever end in the material world. So the illusory energy is making people attached to shallow enjoyment, and then nothing satisfies, and then they have to try and fight the influence of time and stay young and stay beautiful to somehow or other squeeze out more enjoyment. But we see in Bhagavatam that that is simply not possible. We have the story of Maharaj Yayati, who had some benediction, that he was first of all enjoying sense enjoyment with beautiful queens throughout his life, even up to old age. Then he got a benediction that he could exchange his old age for someone. So he went to his son and said, "Son," he went to his sons and he said, "A son should dedicate his life in service to his father," he said to his sons. "Isn't it so?" "Yes, yes, yes, father." He said, "Then I want you to exchange your youth with my old age." So various sons said no. The first son said no, because I need my life to gain experience and to learn. Another one said, "No, I need my life to engage in spiritual activities, and that duty is higher than the duty of father. Therefore, I should not give up the body." But the youngest son agreed to exchange his youth with the father. So father was younger again, ready for action. But only too soon, he was old again, but still not satisfied. That is what is explained. So this is the difficulty. Even if we can get more time, it ultimately doesn't solve the matter. There is a further story written by some writer about a man in the Middle Ages who was experimenting with alchemy, right? And he found the elixir of youth. Elixir of youth. Yes, I got it. He drank that. Yes. Felt the energy, and now he knew, now I am immortal. But then he said, how do I know it's true? So he decided to test it on a mouse. And then he just gave this mouse some of the elixir. And then he had the mouse in some machine, and he just crushed the mouse. And then next moment, whoop, the mouse was back. And then he realized that he was eternal and that he had to live eternally with a mouse. So anyway, it goes on like that. And then, yeah, then in the story he gets married, beautiful wife and etc., nice family and so on. And he loved his wife dearly, but then again, he wasn't sure if he really wanted to give her eternity. And that was maybe a bit much. So he didn't do that, and then they had children, you know. And then the old man didn't die, you know. I mean, the children wanted to inherit something, right? And he just didn't die, you know. Like he stayed alive and alive. Come on, you know. I mean, we got to inherit something before we die, you know. So they put something in the tea, but you know, it didn't work. Of course, it didn't work. And like, yeah, eventually he lost all interest. He lost all interest in the world. Nothing could attract him anymore because he could see that nothing is really fulfilling. And in the end of the story, he sits in this sort of insane asylum, and he sits always with his head down. Just looking down to the ground, doing nothing. So the story is quite good, because it illustrates that no matter what one has in this material world, one cannot be fulfilled. Pizza may be better than chapati, but after a while, maybe. I prefer chapatis, by the way. But after a while, even pizza, you know, we have pizza every day, you know, can we have something else, maybe, same old pizza. So like this, in the material world, nothing can fulfill. That is the issue. We don't say you can't enjoy. Yes, you can enjoy a little bit, but you cannot be fulfilled in the material world. Always empty, still empty. The story Srila Prabhupada tells us about a Brahmana who was very hungry and he was very poor, so he went begging, but he wasn't getting anything. So finally he went to all the areas, you know, where the Brahmins lived, went to the houses, and he hardly got anything. He was starving. So it was so bad. And of course a Brahmin, according to Shastra, cannot really beg anywhere else. But anyway, you know, he was hungry, so he decided to just go begging from some other houses. He even went to the house of a Muslim. He didn't care anymore. Hungry. He just begged from the Muslim. And of course, if you beg and take from a Muslim, you will lose your caste. Right? So that was a big thing, but he didn't care. It's okay. But then the Muslim gave him something, but only very little. He was a miser. He's a miser, so he gave him this little. And he said, then he was lamenting. I lost my caste, but still hungry. Lost my caste, still hungry. So this is our position in the material world.
We are sometimes even breaking the rules for our enjoyment because nothing seems to give fulfillment. We've tried everything within the rules and still we are not fulfilled. Then maybe try something outside of the rules. Break them a little bit. And then we have lost our caste and still hungry. Because even then not satisfied. That is the material world. So no matter how much we try and no matter what we try, still not satisfied. Now you came all the way from India to Australia. Now you are satisfied? Satisfied? Tell me honestly. So satisfied. Satisfied? Not really. So that's how it is. Yes. So we are in this way, in the material world, no matter what we do, never fulfilled. One wife, not enough. Other wife, still not satisfied. Or the other way around. Seventh husband, number seven. You know, still, you know. My third husband, in a way, was nice, you know. But then, he had these bad qualities. I must say, number seven doesn't, on the contrary, has very good qualities in that. But he's a little boring. So, let's go for number eight. See how far we can take it. So, in this way, there is no end to trying for enjoyment in the material world. And yet, it continues to look attractive because material energy gets its beauty from Krishna. Mama Maya, Durajaya, Ameya, Ye, Padyante. It is Mama Maya, which is difficult to overcome. Daivi is a gunamayi, mama maya durachaya, malaviye vipadyante, mayamidam tarantite. Therefore, we cannot overcome this material energy on our own. Not possible. First of all, we should understand that the living being is never independent. We always depend on external things. Hungry, food, the animals are in anamai. In anamai food consciousness, the animals are everywhere looking for something eatable. And we also, you come home, you look in the fridge. Yeah. It's like one of the austerities of ashram life, that you don't have a fridge. You come home, you want to look in the fridge, and it's tough. Imagine living in a brahmachari ashram, and you have no fridge. At all, you can always look. What is that? So always hungry, always anamai, food consciousness. And then the next level, pranamai. Prana means the energy of Krishna, or the life force. So the life force is manifested in all living beings. Therefore, pranamai also is referring to relationships. And then we enter into relationships. Yes, for our happiness. Meaning the relationship with a dog, a cat, a canary, a human being, so many relationships are needed. A relationship with the environment, a relationship with, social relationships, private relationships, very personal, intimate relationships. They come in all kinds. And still, pranamai. So we're looking for a happiness there, but that also doesn't really work. Still frustrated. Then, therefore, we come to the next level, jnanamai, becoming philosophical. Why is it that life is not fulfilling? I wonder why. What? Kayani. I'm not Jalata Pattaya, Sanatana Goswami says, who am I and why am I suffering from the threefold miseries? So then I become philosophical, Jnanamai. And eventually some who manage to go beyond that level begin to realize something of the absolute truth, Vidyanamani. And those who, and they become more satisfied, those who begin to realize something about the spiritual nature of things, but yet it may not be complete. Vadanti tat tat vidam tat yat jnana tvayam vameti paramatmeti bhagavan iti sabjate. The undivided absolute truth manifests itself in three aspects: Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So if through jnanamaya or vijnanamaya one partially realizes the Supreme Lord, everything Brahman pratisthan, everything is resting on Brahman, then one has understood something. Aham Brahmasmi, I'm not this body. That's very good. If we understand Aham Brahmasmi, I'm not this body. But that's not enough. We also have to realize Krishna and Nitya Das, that we are the eternal servant of Krishna. As is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatmana Kamsatina Sarasati Sama Sarvasi Bhutasi Manbhaktim Labhate Param. It is said, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma. One comes to this stage of Brahma Bhuta, of realizing that one is not the body, one is Brahma. Then there is Prasannatma, which is deep satisfaction. But yet, then one should engage in the service of the Lord. Manbhaktim Labhate Param. There one will attain, by engaging in my service, Labhate Param. One will gain the topmost. So in this way, we understand Aham Brahmasmi, Krishna Nitya Das. Then it's complete. And then we've understood Bhagavad Gita. That is the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Understand we're not the body, and understand we are the eternal servant of Krishna. And then fulfillment starts to come. Apuryamanam achala pratistam apasamuda pravisanti yadvat tadvat kamanya pravisanti sarve sasanti adun nakam kami. It is stated that as the rivers flow into the ocean, the water of the ocean is not increasing, it remains unaffected. In the same way, when the consciousness is full of thoughts of service to Krishna, all the desires, all the material desires may flow into that consciousness, but cannot affect consciousness. Because the consciousness is full. There is no space for any material attraction to enter. But when the consciousness is empty, when there's no Krishna, then always hungry, always looking, always checking out everything. Is there anything to enjoy? And even although we have so many things in this pocket, so many things in that pocket, we need something for this pocket as well. Holding something in the hands. And in this way, all the senses simultaneously enjoying nice earphones, nice music, a nice movie to look at, someone is massaging us, meanwhile eating something tasty, still not good enough. Still hungry, still thinking of something else. I wish I was somewhere else, dreaming. We are daydreaming. Sitting there. What are you thinking of? Nothing. What do you mean, nothing? You're not thinking of nothing. Thinking of something forbidden? No, just nothing. Hidden thoughts, daydreaming. Unfulfilled. But you have so many things, you have everything now. Oh, come on. Such a nice car now you have, such a good phone you have now. So many things you have. You've got the girl you always wanted, you have nice kids, everything. House is nice, everything's nice. What's wrong with you? I don't know. You don't know? No. Shall we go somewhere? Nah. Shall we go for a bicycle ride? Nah, not really. For a drive? No. want to see a movie? No. Go and have lunch somewhere? No. What's wrong with you?
I am bored.
So that's the next thing, you know, material world.
We are bored. Boredom.
It's always the same material energy. Bored, stiff. Then Krishna comes. Suddenly Krishna consciousness and new fresh life at last, you know. Oh, I am so happy. I've always wanted this. Finally, I am so inspired. What happened to you? You were so inspired
in Krishna consciousness. I don't know.
Oh. Yes. I thought that when I would come to Krishna consciousness, that the fairy tale would come true, and that it would, that from then on it would be happily ever after. But now I found that it's not the case. At first, when I came to the temple, I saw these devotees. I thought they were all wonderful people. Now I know the truth. So one may start thinking in such a way, but all this, right, is the middle stage, where the initial enthusiasm, which was there, it was shallow because we projected our limited material vision on spiritual life. And then, after some time, we find out that it wasn't exactly, that spiritual life wasn't that Disney world that we thought it was going to be. And then, we're still not satisfied. And then comes Tapo Divyam Putrakiyam Sujityasmat Brahmasukyam Tantam. I don't like the first word of that verse. Oh, suspicious. Austerity. Doesn't sound good. It is said, though, yes, that Rishabdev says, yes, this austerity must be performed if we want to attain transcendental happiness. Because we first have to rise above material conditioning. And we first have to overcome the anattas before we can actually be fulfilled on the spiritual platform. Therefore, Kavikarnapur is describing in his Chaitanya Chandradaya Natak that there are two types of devotional service. Devotional service without nectar and devotional service with nectar. And it is like that. Vaidhi Bhakti, it is described, practicing devotional service according to rules and regulations out of duty. Again, the word tapasya, duty. I don't like these words. Kartavya. Duty. Duty. I am free. We are free from all this ritual. Now we can do what we want, just like everybody else. We are now in Australia. Duty. Duty. In India, they always tell you, this is your duty, that is your duty. Everything, duty, duty, heavy duty. We want to be free, yeah? Just like the rest of the world. They're free, yes. We now also want to be free. Yeah, it's like this. Like there used to be a musical and there was a song about America. I wanna be in America. Everything's free in America. America. America, you know, there's famous song. So yes, the American dream, it's called. We can extend that to the Australian dream because it's sort of like America a bit, isn't it? Similar. They have dollars, so you know, it helps. Dollars are good. Sort of okay. Of course, soon it's going to be, we're going to have to learn Chinese and all these things, but that's not it, that's the future. How can we say, you know? That's the way it's going. Because in the material world, no one can be on top forever. On top for a while, and then you come down again. You have to come down, and that happens to us also here in our dream, in the Australian dream. And then one day you wake up from the Australian dream and say, well, I'm still in the material world. So in Krishna consciousness, in the beginning, we are so enlivened, and then comes the austere part, where we have to carry on and act out of duty. Then when we act out of duty faithfully, then within that we become purified. And then we rise above. And then we come to spontaneous devotional service, where we begin to serve with higher taste. Even in the beginning, there is some higher taste. Prasadam is there, some kirtan is there, the deities are very beautiful. So there is taste. But we are dull. It's something like the example of a feast which is served in the traditional way, where people sit down in rows on the floor with a plate in front of them, and the servers come around with buckets and baskets and serve out the breads. And then you sit in the red row, you know, that row which is not getting the breads. They keep on forgetting this row. You're sitting there. And you've got the rice on your plate, and you're going up, sabji, 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 you know. Finally, you get some sabji, you mix some rice with the sabji, and then they forget to give you the puri. Puri, 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 puri. It's fine, no puri, no puri. Meanwhile, you're eating, you know, and by the time, you know, you come to the sweet rice, right? They forget to give you the gulab jamun. Gulabs, gulabs, gulab, gulab. And in this way, at the end of the meal, you ate everything and you didn't taste one bite. So, we are often like that in our spiritual life, practicing. And we're not seeing, you know, what color outfit are the deities wearing today? What color is it? Was it green? Was it green today? No? Green? Not green. Blue. Was it slightly yellowish? Yeah. Like that, see? It's hard to remember. So we are unconscious. We are like robots, like zombies, walking around in our spiritual life, and we don't even see Krishna. Huh? Krishna? Krishna? Is he here in the temple? I didn't see him. I heard he did. I was looking for some person. I was seeing if the person who is the key to the Maha cabinet in the back was in the temple room. Is Krishna also there? I never saw him. Pronounce. Like this. We do everything mechanical. And because we do everything mechanical, therefore we cannot penetrate. And therefore, because we are doing things mechanical, we're experiencing spiritual life as an austerity. But as we are getting more and more involved and begin to put our heart into it, then devotional service becomes more and more alive, and Krishna also becomes more and more a reality. And as we go deeper, one day we'll see Krishna. At first, maybe we'll see Krishna's hand, later we'll see Krishna's face. In this way, gradually, we'll see Krishna in our life. So, in that way,
we can appreciate.
So, just to conclude the talk, I'll read the verse again. Suta Goswami said, "The Lord does hearing the prayers of Kunti Devi, composed in choice words for his glorification, mildly smiled. That smile was as enchanting as his mystic power." And Prabhupada said, "Anything that is enchanting in the world is said to be a representation of the Lord." So by going through Bhagavatam, we are learning little by little to see Krishna behind everything, and sometimes even Krishna in front. Any questions? Any comments?
Question,
do you know
the verse that you first quoted about Krishna became the reflection?
Yata Bhaka Pratibimba, I call that one.
Tenth candle was only short line, but Yata Bhaka. Bhaka means a boy. Yata Bhaka Pratibimba. So Pratibimba means reflection. So that is the philosophy that it's Pratibimba, this concept of reflection is called Pratibimba.
Yeah. And that, of course, is the philosophy of Parinamavat. Sankaracharya is the philosophy of Vivartavat. Vivartavat is that the reflection is only an illusion. It's false. Is that a rope or a snake? It's false. Right? It's not really there. There's just one. He says there's just one. Because he says Brahman is always Brahman. So how can Brahman change? So there can only be Brahman, he says. It cannot change. That's Sankaracharya. But we say no. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Shakti Parinamavat. He says, because Brahman is Krishna, but actually Brahman is Krishna's energy. It's not just Krishna originally. Brahman is spiritual. It is Krishna's energy. And the energy of Krishna can transform. And therefore, Parinamavat. And therefore, Janmadiyasi Yatamuyati Taratas Chates Vadikisaratena Brahmani Dadi Radikaviye. First verse of Srimad Bhagavatam explaining this Parinamavat, that Krishna is there and everything comes from him. And this is the basis of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. Achintya Preta Veda Tatra, simultaneously one and many. See, Yatarvarka Pratibimba. As the boy is playing with his own reflection, playing with his own energies. Anyone else? Yeah.
I read a few days back from his original Shastan Krishna Dasa Dikari Maharaj's response to a question. So he said the question was where does Krishna come from? He responds that he does not come out of nothing. But he comes from substance Krishna. So he said he is the original substance from which everything has come, including himself.
Mm-hmm. Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarna Karanam, says the Brahma Samhita. Anadir Adir Govinda. So he has no other origin than himself, it says in the verse. Anadir Adir Govinda. Of course, Krishna is eternal. Right? So, never is there natrevaham jatunisam natramnime janadipa. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor any of these kings, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. So, we take it that Sankarsan Prabhu was taking the words from the Brahma Samhita and was pulling them. It was expanding on those words. Anadir Adir Govinda. He has no other origin than himself. But, okay, looking a little, and that was his statement. Quoting a little broader, also taking Bhagavad Gita, or the verse, the Bhagavad Gita verse, never was there a time I did not exist, or the verse I just quoted before from Bhagavatam, the verse was Janmadiya Sri Tamadiyati, or which is also there in the Vedanta Sutra, Janamiyasi Yataha. So, taking that aphorism from the Vedanta Sutra, that comes back in the Srimad Bhagavatam, then we understand that actually Krishna is always Aham Eva Sameva Grenam Yanyat Satasat Param. It is said one of the Chatusloki of Bhagavatam, the first of the Chatusloki Bhagavatam, the original verses in which Krishna revealed transcendental knowledge to Lord Brahma, which have been identified as such in the commentary of Sridhar Swami. These Chatusloki explain that I was there before the creation, during the creation, and after the creation, still only I exist. So Krishna always exists. So that is like, okay, maybe a more full response to the same point. Okay, Srila Vishnanabhi Chakravarti Thakur in his Madhurya Kadambini gives an explanation about this. The whole book is based on development from Srila to Prema. It is said there that in the stage of Srila, the spiritual understanding is localized and the material influence is all-pervading. So at that point, when the spiritual influence is localized, there is a concept, there is a beginning concept, an awakening concept, that we are not the body, in that srala included. As the srala is developing, maybe in the first stages it's not there, but as the srala is developing, it begins. The sense that we are not the body, that we are eternal spirit soul. Then the next stage, in sadhu sangha, when we are associating with devotees, still the material influence is very, very, it seems to be everywhere, right in our face. And then we start the regulated process of devotional service, bhajana kriya, we start to practice. And the material influence is still very, very strong. Constantly, constantly, we are facing Maya. Throughout the stage of anatta nivritti, gradually the material influence goes at some more distance. And in the stage of nista, the material influence is at some distance. In the stage of then comes the stage of ruchi, which will taste, will cover the surface of our entire consciousness. Then, in ashakti, that taste now, that attachment goes deep under the surface, and it becomes very soft, and now it is deep attachment to Krishna. And the material influence has practically gone to the horizon, just almost gone. At the stage of bhava, the material influence, the bhava is all pervading. The material influence has become a shadow. And one is now not only aware of his identity as soul, but aware of his deep relationship with Krishna. One is experiencing constantly that relationship with Krishna from moment to moment. Krishna, one lives in that relationship with Krishna. But in bhava, Rupa Goswami explains, one still has some influence of previous apparat, Vaishnava apparat, and as a result, one still experiences some sense of obstacle in this world, and one experiences still some form of suffering. Then, in prema, that is gone, and then the material influence is completely absent. So in this way, the awareness of the soul begins to develop in the srala stage. And throughout the stages, that awareness expands. When we come to sadhu sangha, the souls start to associate together to serve Krishna together in Vajana Kriya. Alright, we start to engage in devotional service, start our relationship, to develop our relationship with Krishna in an Arjuna Vritti. We come closer to Krishna in Nista. We are fixed, we are dedicated. Krishna, I am yours. Right? And then in Ruchi, we become so attracted to Krishna, then it becomes deep attachment to Krishna. In Ashakti, Prabhupada says, there we begin to develop a desire to serve an eternal associate of the Lord. And at that stage, right, our relationship with Krishna has now become predominant. So the soul is no longer aware, I am eternal spirit soul. This Krishna Nitya Das has now deeply developed in bhava. That's overwhelming. In brain, to be the eternal servant of Krishna is all there is. There's even no more contemplation, I'm an eternal spirit soul. Right? In brain we know it, but why even philosophize? Why even bother to philosophize? It is said, the gopis in Vrindavan, they are not spending their time with philosophy. They spend their time just worshipping, serving Krishna somehow or other. It said the birds that are jumping from branch to branch in the trees in Vrindavan, they are philosophers. You see these philosophers, they are the birds jumping from branch to branch. Like that. Yes. He fell down from the Baba platform. Yeah. No, I wouldn't know. The name he mentioned somewhere, I wouldn't know what the offense was. But we should understand that in Baba, we are absorbed in deep emotional attraction to Krishna. Then they're also, and gradually develop a particular sthayi bhava, a particular mood. Right? We go deep in it. So either we're in the mood of a coward boy, or we're in the mood of a gopi, or in vatsalya rasa, as parental. And so a bhava has a particular nature, and one is always absorbed in that bhava. But the principal reason that is identified in Bhagavatam directly is not that he had committed some previous unknown offense. The principal reason was that he started to play with the deer during his sadhana, and as he was performing his sadhana, he got so much absorbed in playing with the deer that he became neglectful, and he was no longer really doing his sadhana. He was just acting as if he was meditating, but he wasn't really. He's just playing with the deer. And in this way, he neglected his spiritual practices, and that brought him down, so it is explained. So one can see that in Baba there is still a dependence on spiritual practice. Although it comes natural, one is absorbed, and it is all coming by taste and all by desire, but if there is neglect of spiritual practice, then fall down is still within the realm of possibility, although it's highly unlikely. Yeah. At the stage of Ruchi, okay, the possibility is greater that by neglect one may be drawn again to the material energy and loses one's taste. Yeah. In the stage of Nista, if one is weak, where one's firm in determination, if one is weak in one's practices, then again the mind starts to take control. So like this, we have to see. And it said, but it is said that by offense, the Majam Adhikari can become a Kanista again. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that in Jaya Dharma. But the Uttama Adhikari, Uttama Adhikari is deeply, deeply absorbed in his relationship with Krishna. So, he generally will not commit offense in this life. That's inconceivable. He is beyond offense at the stage of bhava. So, and it's not that a previous offense will overcome him. It is not that karma can overcome bhakti. Right? And ultimately, we have to see that if the offense is very great, right, then we see that for a very long time the reactions can be there. Like we see Aswatthama has to wait for a long time, or Daksha, a whole kalpa, he walks around the head of a goat when he offended Shiva, things like that. So sometimes the reaction is very long to an offense, but we take it that the primary reason why Bharat Maharaj fell down was due to neglect of sadhana, and then the trace of previous Vaishnava aparad, which is generally there in bhava according to Rupa Goswami, was a further addition to make to him being susceptible and weak. So we must remain careful about our spiritual practices. Finish. All right. Then, thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gantara, Shri Bhagavatam ki jai.